I'm Gabby. Jules Grayskies over West London. Jules, what a weekend.
Wow.
You never see a manager coming out and saying, oh, look, I'm going to leave at the end of the season. Instead, we've had two days at two of the biggest clubs in the world. We'll be getting into all that. We'll be getting into the FA Cup. We'll be getting into Bayern, Real Madrid. Tons to talk about.
Yeah.
But we have to start in Anfield, where on Friday, Liverpool, or Jurgen Klopp announced, hey, my tank is nearly empty. I am running out of gas. I'm going to leave at the end of the season. I wrote a long column on the website giving my views.
Great,
really, really good.
Very good.
And for me, though, the big takeaway, we'll get into the details of the nitty-gritty and obviously the fact that they beat Norwich 5-2 this weekend, is the admission of humanity, the admission of weakness, which... It's not something we see from leaders, right? CEO types, managers, so
very
on.
True.
Because and partly the reason we always thought, oh, they have to show their self-confidence, they have to show their invulnerability. That's how they get buy-in. People have to have faith in them if somebody is weak or vulnerable or tired. But I think the world has changed, and maybe it's millennials, maybe it's men's mental health, whatever. Somebody can come out and say this.
Yeah.
I know, hopefully, that they'll still follow him between now and June.
Yeah, I think the fragility, I think you can be strong like Klopp and Liverpool and still fragile. And I think this is why he highlighted. You can be Roy Hodgson and be 20 years older than Klopp and still feel that you've got enough energy to manage the Premier League and be 20 years younger like Klopp and feel like this is it. Now, I can't give much more. Even if you are at a really good time, you started to rebuild, you've got a very good young squad for years to come. So you would think, actually, this is a great time for Klopp. Why is he stepping down now? And I think it's because for all the things that we see, the rebuilding process, the success on the pitch, him on the touchline that really seems to be exactly like he was last year, the year before, etc., etc. Deep under, there's clearly a lassitude, tiredness. I don't know if there's problem more private that he can't talk about right now. Maybe not. But... man, what a shock that was. Because Xavi, we talk about later, under pressure, you can see.
Different situation.
You can see. But for Klopp, I think nobody expected. And a secret like this, very often, as you know, kind of leaks or you hear about it, you hear something. This time, they kept it under wrap and then he just announced the bombshell.
So they came out and he told the club, he told FSG in November. And... naturally, I thought, okay, did they start discreetly asking questions? I don't think they did because, like you said, you can't keep this under wraps for 2 months. There's just too many moving parts, right? If you start talking to other people. So there is the question of what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
And instantly people are going to say, oh, look, Carlo Ancelotti re-upped at Real Madrid, which means, hey, look, Xabi Alonso, maybe. We'll get into that later. But there's so many more questions because... this is definitively the end of an era, right? When you think about it, in the front office, Mike Gordon gone, Julian Ward gone, before him, Michael Edwards gone.
Yeah.
On the pitch, Henderson gone, Fabinho gone, Firmino gone, Sadio Mane gone, Mohamed Salah and Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah.
You know, Salah 1 year left. I think van Dijk is 2 years.
Yeah.
But still, like, this is the transition.
Yeah.
And now they have to start knocking on doors.
But it felt like Klopp would oversee that transition.
It felt that way. It felt very much guaranteed to me that he would say, look, we brought in these younger players. We're rebuilding for the future. I think when FSG got the call, and by the way, sorry, the other big insecurity is Fenway Sports Group themselves, right?
Yeah.
John W. Henry and Tom Warner are both in their 70s. They put the club up for sale. I mean, they said, oh, we're looking for investment strategic partners at a certain valuation. Never happened. But once you put a club up for sale, it's kind of for sale.
It's out like there,
That is going to be a big, big insecurity between now and the end of the season. Jules, for me, I want to get your thoughts on this. The biggest thing for Klopp, and I do have some positivity for it, is it's almost like a win one for the Gipper situation between now and the end of the season, right? He's given so much of this club.
Yeah.
And the players will actually be energized and motivated more than they would be.
It's a sad news, and Friday was a sad day, but I think it's going to boost those players who would want to finish as the highest possible. They're having that incredible next 4 months, win everything they can. I really feel that they will want to give him the perfect send-off, and send-off will be winning all four trophies that they can still win, for example. But if you think that that could be a downer, I think for them, it would be an upper. You said
yeah, it'll be a boost. All right, Jules, we mentioned succession, but let's start. Just legacy, because I think this is really important for those who don't know him so well. I mean, for me, I mean, we kind of assume most people listen to our podcast are pretty much hardcore football fans, yeah. Right? So obviously in his, what, eight-ish years he spent there, he won a number of trophies. I think there's obviously reached three Champions League finals, won one of them. The big thing that he did was he delivered the title 30 years after their last title. I think more than that, he formed a connection with the city and the fan base. You know, I often think about, all right, what should we judge a manager on, right? A coach's work. And obviously results is one of them. Obviously, is a team moving in the right direction? Are you improving individual players? Yeah. Which I think is another thing that he really did. I mean, Andy Robertson was not Andy Robertson.
No.
To mention one guy.
Yeah.
I'd argue Firmino wasn't Firmino.
I mean, Mo Salah wasn't.
Mo Salah was pretty good. No, but you're right. Obviously, he took him to another level. So I think Jordan Henderson, I think another one, obviously benefited from Klopp. So ticks those boxes. But what stands out, and Liverpool lends itself to this because they like their folk hero managers.
Yeah.
But he really formed a connection.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Was outspoken sometimes on non-football issues as well. And he had this enthusiasm, this charisma, which I don't think probably Liverpool hadn't seen since King Kenny.
Yeah, King Kenny, and then you can obviously go down to Shankly.
I mean, Rafa was very, very loved too, but in a very different way.
Very different way, you're right. Very different personality, of course, well. And I think Klopp's personality in Liverpool, in what football means to these fans, the city, I think it was like a match made in heaven, really. And it worked so well. You could say, of course, 8.5 years, one league title, but because it was this City and Guardiola incredible team, when you reached 98 points, 97 points, 92 points, and you only won one of those three titles, there's clearly somebody against you that is amazing too.
The Manchester City have won five of the last six Premier League titles. The only team, I think, that really pushed them in that time.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Are Liverpool.
Yeah, it's just, and you're right, all three, and we said it a lot on the show, the three criteria to judge a manager, the style, the success, and the player's improvement are all there and more, even. So, one of the greatest, without a doubt, a sad day. But like we said, they've got 4 months to finish on the highest highs of, you know, possible, and they will do that.
In terms of the squad, I don't necessarily need to mention, I don't want to get into the Norwich game because let's face it, it was one-sided. But what was interesting too, and people made a big deal out of this, is Bradley, McConnell in midfield, I think making a start. There's a real sense that, you know, there's a generation of youngsters coming through. Kwanzaa is another one. And that there's a strong group left behind, even if Salah and Van Dijk leave, and they're not going to be around more than a couple of years. At best, right?
But that transition has started already. And for the youngsters, I mean, Nico Williams looked really good too at some point, and he plays for Nottingham Forest. He's not even where starting. So
wasn't he a Welsh international?
Yeah, but you see what I mean? Exactly. So with the youngest ones, unless they're Trent and they are really something else, I'm a bit more wary about, although they look decent. I just think that, you know, as well, before we talk about who could come next, it's also how much Klopp was doing for that club, in the sense that, do you know who was the sporting director? So Edwards left.
Julian Ward
left. And Schwarzke was really the kind of guy who was a bit of a sporting director. He's leaving at the end of this month, not even waiting for the end of the season. So not just they would have to find a new manager and backroom staff, because everybody else is leaving too, but also a sporting director. And as you keep repeating us very rightly, it makes a lot of sense to go first for the sporting director, and he will pick who he wants to also work with, share the same philosophy, blah, 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 everything like that. So it's even more problem than for Liverpool, I think.
Here's the uncomfortable question. If we know Fenway put the club up for sale, and we know that they're in their 70s, and they say it's not for sale now, but, you know, whatever, are they going to invest in a sporting director, because this is a really, really big call.
Or you trust the new manager to do that job. A bit like Klopp and Linders have been really kind of doing it for the last year or so.
Yeah, and where did Liverpool finish last season?
It was a tough season.
It's a difficult one.
Yeah, like, but look on the transfer market. McAllister, Szoboszlai, a lot of them are Klopp's choices.
Yeah, no question. Like, and there's no kind of perfect science to it. But this team was built by Klopp with Michael Edwards.
Yeah, 100%.
And to then step into another model where the sporting director is an extension of the manager, especially when it's a new manager. Let's not forget.
Yeah.
I'm more confident handing Klopp the keys to the transfer window and getting kind of an execution-only director of football, if Klopp is already there, he's already established a culture, he's already proved himself as a manager. Again, I would always have an independent, free-thinking sporting director, but in Klopp's case, you might make an exception. Now he's gone. And the other thing is, as you noted, and this was a little weird to me, his entire backroom staff is gone, including Pep Blinders, who a lot of people thought, could be a successor.
I think he was king.
Now, if I were a conspiracy theorist, I would say, well, I haven't asked, is Pep Blinders' tank running on empty as well? Is he tired too? Did he want to go?
Yeah.
Might it make sense to tell them, hey guys, we don't know who the manager is, the new guy coming in, but you still have jobs here if you want them. You still have contracts here. Mm-hmm. Or did they all leave because with
like
Klopp,
loyalty for club?
Yeah, okay, loyalty. But these guys have mortgages, right?
Yeah, true.
And they don't know when Klopp's taking another job, unless they do know, and unless some people have suggested, he takes some time off, and maybe after the Euros, the Germany job possibly, which isn't as draining day to day, as being a club manager.
Yeah, you go back home.
Could that be?
So I read that he said, or I listened to him saying that he wanted to take a year off and something, which I think could make sense. If you have energy, if you feel like it's been the last 9 years have been draining, etc. The Germany job is obviously coming up because Nagelsmann, as we know, will finish after the Euros. Although I guess if they win the Euros, they might want the German Federation might want him to stay a bit longer.
I'm not sure he'd want to stay.
Maybe he wouldn't want to stay, exactly. So this is perfect for Klopp, right? So maybe they know already that they're going to do that in July or whatever, or August, and that he will bring with him Linders and Kravitz and all of them. Yeah, maybe.
One obvious question I think some people are going to have now, and we touched upon Xabi Alonso before, it's almost like too obvious.
Yeah.
The man is under contract with Bayer Leverkusen. He's phenomenal. Unbeaten this season except for... unbeaten this season.
League and in Europe.
In the league and in Europe, which is phenomenal. It's nearly February. And obviously people have said, well, if he leaves, he's going to go to one of his former clubs. His former clubs are Real Madrid, Liverpool, Bayern Munich, and we also see that. Everybody seems to forget that, right? I mean, we talked about the conspiracy people putting 2+2, but I don't see Xabi Alonso committing to leaving now when he can deliver a historic title, because word will get out.
Yeah.
Alternatives to Xabi Alonso? Do we agree that it's highly unlikely that FSG have seriously approached people?
Yeah, surely. We would know by now. So I don't think they have. And also,
so could it be that they're looking for the sporting director?
I think it could. I think it would make sense. I think a Nagelsmann, if he's on the market, could be tempting, interesting. The thing is, you're never going to get someone like Klopp. Get that.
You're not getting a replacement. You're getting a successor.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want something as close as Klopp, I don't even know where you go and where you look at, because even Xabi Alonso plays a different style, a different formation. He's got a different personality. So I don't know. I think it's a really tricky one. And also, if you after somebody already at a club like Xabi Alonso, and the guy said, listen, I'm not saying yes, I'm not saying no, I'm saying let's meet at the end of the season, then what do? You wait? Can Liverpool really wait that long?
No, you get a director of football. You work on the director of football.
Yeah, true. Okay, but let's say you get Paul Mitchell for the sake of it.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul Mitchell, if he wants to hire Xabi Alonso, and Xabi says, listen, maybe not, I don't know yet, but let's I don't want to talk about it and hear about it until the season is finished. Can you really afford to wait all that long to prepare for
a succession
of Klopp?
I think you can, I think you have to, and I think you owe it to Klopp anyway. Right? Not to allow this to be a distraction to the team between now and the end of the season.
Yeah.
And I'll leave you with this quote from Eckhart Tolle, the guy who wrote The Power of Now.
Yeah.
Just to remind your Liverpool fans, it's a scary time. I get that. You can't control the past. It's gone. You can't control the future because it's not here yet. But you can control and enjoy the present. You've got 3 more months of Klopp. Enjoy it. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Klopp. Let's move on to Barcelona. They lose at home. Yeah. 5-3 to Villarreal.
Villarreal.
The game, I mean, so much happened in this game. But let's move beyond this because it was overshadowed by what happened afterwards. Xavi announcing in the press conference that he was going to leave the club at the end of the season in June, regardless of what happens. And he hadn't even told the players yet. He had apparently told the club, I think, the day before, a couple of days before. Jules, this is a completely different scenario from Jurgen Klopp.
For sure, we talked about the pressure that he was under, the fact that he's already said a few weeks ago that if they didn't win any trophies at the end of the season, that he would resign himself and leave and go, which we explained in the last show when we had a big segment on them, that it was a bit strange, that it's really rare for a manager to say that. At the time, they had lost in the Copa del Rey, but
The time, I'd suggested that maybe he said this to kind of get a signal from the club.
Yeah,
have Laporta come out and say something like, oh, no, it doesn't matter if we win or not. Obviously, we want to win. We're looking for progress, blah, blah, blah. We have faith in Xavi. Instead, we got him something worse. Unlike in the past, if we don't win, there will be consequences.
Yeah, but
that's really helpful, Johan.
Exactly. And I think the key here is how isolated Xavi felt, the lack of support that he felt received on top of not just the club, I think getting him to dry, leaving him to dry.
Hanging him out to dry.
Hanging him to dry. I think the pressure from the media, and we know in Spain, and especially in Madrid and Barcelona, that if there's an agenda against you, very often set by the club and the president and all of that, who leak stuff and talk a lot behind your back, it could be very difficult. And I thought, okay, Klopp is a sad news, and the way he delivered that video. The Xavi press conference was painful to watch, painful to listen to. You had so much empathy for him and so much pity in a way, because it really felt like, I'm here on my own, all the pressure coming, I don't know how to do, what to do. And he's a young manager, of course he's young, especially in the big five leagues in Europe. But I just would not wish that on anybody else.
Yeah, look, I'm sure we're going to have people watching this and saying like, oh, but look at his results, he's rubbish, you got to go, blah, blah, blah. Bring in XYZ. Okay, so first of all,
he won the league 6 months ago.
No, he did win the league 6 months ago, but I think more than that, XYZ is going to cost you an arm and a leg, right? If he's going to be better than Xavi. Right now, Barcelona don't have that. Right now, we still have Laporta mortgaging the future with his stupid levers and all the financial controls that are there. So think about that before you start talk about bringing in God knows who to go and manage your club. And Klopp was linked to Barcelona. Yeah. That's exactly what he needs if he wants to chill out, right?
Yeah.
Secondly, last season, and this is very obvious. I don't know if they use analytics. This is very basic analytics, right? Last season, they at this stage of the season, they had conceded 7 goals, and they had an XG of around 17.5. The XG this year is around 22, and they've conceded 29 goals. Now, obviously, they got worse this year. We can talk about Ter Stegen and Gavi not being
XG
there.
Against, you meant, yeah?
But the obvious thing is, that was not they were not good defensively last year, too. They didn't give up goals for different reasons, variants, or Ter Stegen, whatever. Did they go and address this in the summer? No. No, I'm sorry. Oh, right. Sorry, they brought in Inigo Martinez, yes.
Okay. And your friend, João Cancelo, who, as we saw in the Villarreal game.
Yeah, the defensive machine, João Cancelo. Yeah. And I look at this from Xavi's perspective. When he joined the club, I think Roberto was already gone or was going, right?
Yeah.
But Matteo Alemany was there.
His guy.
He leaves.
Yeah.
Replaced by who? By Deco, agent.
His guy.
Jordi Cruyff, gone.
His guy.
All of a sudden, you're wondering, wait, is there anybody upstairs other than, Deco, who brings in João Felix and João Cancelo? Purely coincidence.
Yeah.
I mean, you put these things together, and you really are isolated out there, right? You take a genius to figure out that Lewandowski was going to slow down as he gets older because the man is not a robot.
Yeah.
It didn't take a genius to figure these things out, that you could go with youth, but maybe you should put your resources there rather than flights of fancy with Gundogan at his age, a big free agent contract. And every time, Barcelona have not played well, and maybe that's on Xavi.
Yeah, no,
but
no.
Over the last few games, actually, they played
decent
better.
Performances, yeah.
You know, the Bilbao game,
yeah.
That wasn't a bad game. I know they obviously they lost and whatever.
The Betis game, the Betis performance.
Betis, they won, good. Right? Yeah. And it feels to me like there's more to the story. It feels to me like there's stuff here that we don't know about. We can speculate if we like. Anyway, with Klopp, you speculated that it might actually be a boost to their title winning chances.
Yeah, I really believe that. Here? Wow.
We're both really negative. I don't think anybody's going to say, oh, look, Xavi's leaving at the end of the year. Let me play better. Let me defend better. To me, it's a mystery because I wrote this in my column today. Like I said, if I were Xavi and I communicated on the spot after that defensive freak show that I saw from Cancelo, from Ronald Araujo passing the ball, I could understand somebody making an emotional decision and saying, like, that's it, I'm done. I'm done with you Muppets.
Yeah.
That's obviously not the case, but it's hard to see how he won't be seen as a lame duck unless... Yeah. Look, we're both Xavi fans. Let's come out.
Completely.
Unless he knows your psychology so well that saying he's going to leave is actually going to make the players rally around and saying, guys, we can still change his mind. No?
I don't think. This comes on the back of reports already, and including on ESPN, that he'd lost the dressing room or that the players were not on board anymore so much, that there were tensions.
Let's name names. I'm sure the reports don't name who he lost in the dressing room.
No, but, okay.
But who do you think? Because I really wonder, who has status in that dressing room and who would be enough of a snake and stupid enough as well to not understand Barcelona's overall financial situation as well, that they would turn on Xavi. No, I would.
Okay, so Lewandowski doesn't seem happy.
Okay,
he wouldn't
dude,
be surprised
you're
if
old,
it was him.
You got a year left, you make a bunch of money.
But still,
you're irrelevant.
Still, is Gundogan happy there?
All right, dude. Right.
Remember what he said after the Clasico that they lost when they played really well for an hour? When they lost 2-1? That didn't sound very positive.
Hey, Ilkay, you've been here 6 months, right? No, seriously, why don't you bugger off back to Manchester or Dortmund or whoever will have you, right?
So, I don't know. So I don't know who. Maybe that was not true. Maybe they're just
I don't know. But I would have thought dressing room, the leaders, I would have thought the leaders should be the veteran players who've been there, right? So I would care much more about the opinion of Frankie de Jong, for better or worse. Obviously, Gavi and Pedri, I'm assuming doesn't talk much, but Gavi would, and he's very young, but Gavi's got...
You would expect them to be on board, right?
I would expect them to be on board. Ter Stegen.
Yeah.
Araujo and Koundé. Guys, he's gone to bat for you guys so many times.
Yeah.
That I would expect some level of loyalty. And if Koundé thinks, I'm playing rubbish, I'm playing like a mannequin because Xavi's a bad manager, then the guy's got something wrong in the head. So I don't believe it's those guys. No. So when people say lost their, who are you talking about? Joe Felix? You're talking about Joe Felix because he's not going to get a deal?
Are not happy. I don't know. Maybe Cancelo and Felix.
Oh, you're not happy, Cancelo? Really?
Well, he doesn't play anymore, right?
Okay, yeah. You didn't play at Bayern. You didn't play Manchester City. Hey, you ever wonder maybe...
He's your guy, by the way.
He was my guy going forward. But when I see this defensive stuff...
I mean, it's bad. But even if it's not true, even if the dressing room was still behind him... But by the way, the fact that he didn't tell them and told the press first shows that there must have been tension. Because if you love that dressing room, if you love everybody, you don't... quote them like that and mention it to the whole world before actually telling them.
I think more facts are going to emerge on this
one. Yeah, for sure. But so it comes on the back of all of that. I just can't see how they can turn this into a positive. They have to fight to finish top four because Atletico, Girona and Real Madrid, okay, this is three. Then you've got Athletic Bilbao behind. Real Sociedad can have a really good run and maybe come and...
Yeah. The bottom could fall out.
Yeah,
that's what you're talking
completely,
about.
Completely. Especially if you have a bit more injuries, if there's a bit more tension, if there's this, if there's that. And I don't know, I would think that this morning, I mean, they might have a day off, Sunday, Monday, I don't know exactly the scheduling, but it must have been pretty gloom the first time that they got all back together at the training ground.
Watch this space, because I think the situation is going to get worse before it gets better. Jules, we need to conclude this by giving a shout out to...
Who's coming next?
I'm not going there. I mean, you're going to suggest Rafa Marquez because he's a cheap and cheerful in-house.
He's the Barça B.
Oh, yeah. And look.
No, but then, okay.
I'm going to say something that's going to drive you mad.
Yeah.
Well, the last time they promoted somebody from Barça B to... Yeah.
Yeah.
It worked out pretty well.
Rafa Marquez is not Pep Guardiola. I think we can all agree on that right now. They have no money. So where do you go? Well, Garcia Pimienta, you bring him back to the club because he's doing a good job at Las Palmas? Maybe. No. But where do you really go?
Yeah. Can I say something? What you do is you build a time machine. You go back 3 years. Laporta doesn't pull his stupid levers. You sell what you can sell, and you put your faith in the kids then. That's what you do.
Yeah, but okay,
and you still finish top four.
It's not going to happen. So what do you do really in real life? You know what? You can convince Xavi to stay maybe and change his mind.
Could do, or maybe they go around the Champions League, find some money to pay a manager. That, I mean, I think those are the realistic scenarios.
In September, he signed a new deal. In January... to say, you know what, I'm leaving in 3 months' time. This is never seen before.
It tells you, it speaks volumes.
Never seen before.
We have to praise Villarreal and Marcelino, five goals away. That's big, even though several of them were gifts, but still.
Yeah.
Considering
and
how the season started.
We're still 3-2 down with 10 minutes to go.
And who scored the fifth goal? El Comandante Morales.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, enough, Barca. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Manchester United have some nervy moments against Newport County in the FA Cup. They go 2-0 up. They're pegged back to 2-2. Jules, Ten Hag after the game said that his opponents created nothing, scored a goal out of nothing. You almost think that, you know, Newport County were three divisions below them.
Unbelievable. I mean, between the Anthony goal celebration, and I know he hadn't scored this season yet, but it felt like it was against Manchester City in the derby. The Ten Hag reaction after the game, just okay, you've done the job. They're playing the fourth division and you are Manchester United. And at some point, they drew with you. They drew.
You could be a little classy rather than pointing out how they were so bad.
They were so bad. They had nothing. They just, you know, give them a bit of credit.
Meanwhile, it's 3-2 when you're hanging on at the end.
Exactly. So you've gone through. And that's it. But, oh, man. And more controversy around United, Gabby, with Marcus Rashford disciplined by the club for reportedly going out clubbing in Belfast on Thursday night and then being unwell and not being able to train on Friday morning.
Yeah, so the report said that he traveled to Belfast by private jet, flew back in the early hours of Friday morning and then was not in condition to train. Now, when these reports are out, they're going to let you know in the media. It's not like Rashford told them this.
No.
It's United who made sure everybody knew. And officially, he's just unwell, but that's why these stories are out there. And nobody's suing, saying these stories aren't true, right? This is obviously an issue. He needs somebody to talk to him. You know, rather than having an advisor who's quick to threaten people with libel, maybe get an advisor who says, Marcus, do you want to be a professional footballer? You've got so much to give. We've praised you so much.
But from bad to worse.
Also, and I say this with the greatest of respect to the Belfast club scene, which I'm a little bit too old for. When did Belfast become Ibiza?
Maybe he likes it there. Maybe there's one club he likes. I don't know.
Let's go there, Jules. Brest comes from two goals down at the Parc des Princes to draw 2-2 with Paris Saint-Germain. Do you want to celebrate the female body part or complain about your boys?
I would do both because I thought Brest were fantastic.
Story of the season.
Yeah, in the second half, they're third, and there's a reason why they were brave. Even 2-0 down at halftime, they came back in the second half. Got a bit lucky, of course, but you need to. Their first goal is deflected shot, but the second goal is a beautiful backheel from Pere Alage. The cross by Satriano is great. And they just... And you know, it's not one for now because I know we don't have the time. But Eric Roy, the manager, who the last time he managed before getting this job a year ago was 11 years before when he was at Nice for a very short spell as a manager, who in between have been a TV pundit, a sporting director, set up like a beach football tournament and stuff like that, right? And then still somehow people got him a another chance, believed in him 11 years after to come and make this team one of the best team in Ligue 1. I think it's amazing. So well done to Eric Roy. I'm disappointed because my boys were 2-0 up.
Kylian Mbappe missing in action.
They just went for a nap at halftime and never woke up.
But Speedy Barcola was good in the first half until he got sent off.
Yeah, Bobby Barcola, and they got sent off. So here we go. He's still not my favorite player. Inter beat Fiorentina 1-0 as Lautaro scores again. And Nico Gonzalez hits the world's worst penalty. Gab, this wasn't pretty, but they go upon clear with a game in hand.
It wasn't pretty at all. I think Fiorentina are really awkward.
They're a good team.
Inter, Fiorentina, very attacking. And so, you know, Inter don't like being attacked. And it was very Simone Inzaghi, a lot of changes, Aslani in the middle of the park and whatnot. And they pretty much gutted it out. It would not have been a scandal if Fiorentina had drawn this game on the balance of play.
Çalhanoğlu, how important they are, and when they're suspended or missing,
you got two-thirds of your starting midfield out. Yeah. Not the same. Bayern win the local derby against Augsburg and come to within 2 points of the top. Jules, were you impressed? And
no.
Sacha Bouy move the needle for them?
So I don't think they played well at all. They won, but
can I give you a Harry Kane stat? He took his first shot on goal. I think it was minute 46.
Yeah, that's right. And then he almost got his goal disallowed when he was clearly coming off the defender. The pass was from the defender. So then they rightly changed it and allowed it. But I just still don't really know where this team is going. And yet they have a lot of players out. Okay, and they lost Coman to an injury, like a bad knee injury.
Is that a bad thing? I mean, I feel Coman.
Come on.
But Coman's been terrible this season.
I know, but...
He's been really, really terrible.
Because he's been terrible, he can't become good again?
No, that's fine. But you know what? If you're all worried about 6 and 9 and your numbers in your head, here's an easy one for you, right? Here's a really, really simple solution for you, right? Why don't you play Musiala wide, which I wouldn't do, but in the circumstances, Musiala wide is better than Coleman. Play Musiala and Sané, and then you can stick another dude in midfield with Kimmich, since he can't play 6 on his old. Have Goretzka through the middle, Muller through the middle, whatever. I mean,
now you will have to do something because there's no Coman anymore. So maybe Musiala will do that. And for Sacha Bouy, I think even if you might think 30 million is a bit expensive, I think he's a wonderful young talent. And he would be great for them. He's a proper right back. And by the way, he's Paris born and bred. As you know, he grew up not far from where we lived. And his nan used to go to the same market to buy a fruit and veg than my mum. So, hey, you see, it can only be a good thing.
There you go. I'm sure Mazraoui loves it too.
Yeah. For the 10th time this season, Real Madrid come from behind, winning 2-1 away at Las Palmas. Grab some love for my boys, Camavinga and Tchouaméni, who scored on his birthday, by the way.
Tchouaméni scores on his birthday. Camavinga sets up a ridiculous assist. By the way, Camavinga was seen as somebody in Spain, is he actually skillful? Is he actually a passer?
Really? Who's that?
Just a runner. Well, some Spanish media.
Okay,
because
right.
He's not Toni Kroos or Luka Modric. There was no Jude Bellingham. He moved it around. They found out we saw Brian Diaz. We saw Dani Ceballos starting.
I don't want to see that again, by the way.
Okay, but this was one Madrid comeback where they were actually really, really good, I thought, throughout, even without Bellingham. This was one of those where it's like a smash and grab at the end. Now, this was way back on Friday, but Manchester City beat Spurs with a late Nathan Ake goal. Jules, very simple. Did Ruben Dias foul Vicario on that play?
I don't think so. For
really?
Not for me, yeah.
Okay, no, it's all right. You can jump backwards into
no, just
my boy Vic.
He plays for the ball, and he goes for the ball and plays for the ball. I think Vicario should have dealt with the ball much better. In a game that City, by the way, was so dominant, I think it was one of the best performances this season.
City deserved the 3 points, but you know my views on
the qualification.
Whatever. It's equivalent. Yeah. City deserved to win. They played better. But, and I thought Spurs were disappointing.
Come on, man. Well, so the referee and VAR got it wrong, both of them.
Don't get me started.
No, I'm just saying. Juventus dropped points at the head by Empoli at home 1-1 after Arek Milik gets himself sent off after just 16 minutes, Gab. This was silly from him.
It was very silly. He apologized. It was rash. You can't do that. You know, in the middle of the park as well. Vlahovic, though, got the equalizer before the wunderkind Baldanzi. I put them ahead before Baldanzi equalized. It's tough. You can't gut it out. You can't 60 minutes. Juve can't play 75 minutes at home, even against Empoli, and be sure of creating tons of chances, and they didn't. No. So it's definitely 2 points dropped.
Yeah.
Bayer Leverkusen held to a scoreless draw at home by Borussia Mönchengladbach. Jules, are they running out of steam?
But I don't think so. Jeremy Frimpong on his own could have had a hat trick.
They had so many chances.
An incredible.
The XG were like 2.2 to 0.2.
Yeah, if you watch one thing today, if you haven't watched this game, of course, is the Florian Neuhaus tackle on Frimpong, last ditch tackle yes. in the box. It's incredible. And if it's a big if, I know, but if Bayern win the title by a point, let's say.
They can thank Florian Neuhaus.
Oh my God, that tackle would have made a massive difference. Gab, reinforcements are also on the way for Xabi Alonso. Borja Iglesias is arriving on loan.
The only guess he really, really does not like Patrick Schick, or maybe Victor Boniface's injury is worse than we expected. This is a weird one because they can turn to make the loan permanent for 8 million euros, which is not a lot. I mean, he's 31 now, I think. He hasn't scored at all this year.
He's hardly played even.
And he's hardly played. And some people might, he's hardly played after notching double figures in the league in the last 3 years, including 15 last year. Some people have suggested, if you remember, Borja Iglesias was somebody who came out, he's one of the few Spanish men's national team players who said that, well, if Jenny Hermoso. If Rubiales isn't banned, then I don't want to play for Spain.
Yeah.
Some people are connecting the two. As somebody who maybe talks a little too much, has opinions. I think, well done, Borja. Solidarity. Also back on Friday, Chelsea and Villa battle to a scoreless draw. Jules, your thoughts?
Well, we have a replay. I'm not sure this is a good thing for anybody, really.
Yeah.
And that's just... That's all I have to say on this, Gabby. Milan missed two penalties at home to Bologna and gave up an injury time penalty of their own. Gab, why can't Pioli put together a good run of results?
I'm not blaming this on Pioli. I mean, Bologna played well. They did Xerxes, fantastic.
Yeah.
But you missed two freaking penalties, and the penalty you give up at the end is stupid. Terracciano pulling him from behind. Dude, there's cameras everywhere. There's VAR. You're on CCTV. Don't do that. This one is not on Pioli. And Rafael Leao, I thought, looked really good.
Yeah.
Girona stay top of La Liga, winning 1-0 at Rafa Benitez's Celta. Jules, they're still not going away, even with the injuries.
Yeah, Gabby. And we've said it before, though, the impact from their usual subs, whether it's during a game or like in this game when Porto starts, where he's not really a starter, certainly not, you know, when everybody is fit. And for him to go and score the winner and have that kind of impact is everything you want from your... No, your second 11, but you know the players that you know are not going to be your stars this season. And it's great, they keep it winning, even if it's a bit tight, even if there's not
be
much
lucky
margin.
Too, Celta had some chances
course,
as well.
But you know, the only way they can go all the way, as we said many times, is that, riding a little bit their luck and having the key players delivering, and when they can't, having some super sub coming in and doing the job, and that's exactly what happened. So well done to them. Borussia Dortmund beat local rivals Bochum 3-1, and it's Niklas Füllkrug with the hat-trick, Gab. They're 3 points clear of Leipzig now in fourth.
They're rolling. They're doing this a bit differently. It was a hat-trick from Füllkrug. Two of those were penalties.
Yeah, so. Not sure it counts, but...
They were clearly the better team. My man Mattsson again dominating down the flank. What was interesting, too, is he switched it around. He played Füllkrug with Moukoko, almost a 4-2-4 or 4-4-2, if you like. And I'm revisiting my views on Füllkrug. Like I told you, especially after seeing him in person, the guy can easily play with it too. He's not just a lump of a center forward.
No.
He's not fast, but he really has an eye for the players around him. And I don't think we'll see two up top the rest of the way if everybody's fit. But it's an interesting thing. I wonder how Volkrug Malin, for example, through the middle might work. Third straight defeat for Leipzig Jules as they get trounced away to Stuttgart 5-2, and Deniz Undav scores a hat-trick while asking Girassi who?
Girassi who?
Who that?
Seru is going to stay a bit longer at AFCON because Guinea won.
They don't need him. Stay there. Stay there. We have Deniz Undav.
We also said that Stuttgart, the two games previously, were disappointing. But in this one, they were outstanding. And Leipzig are a good team, even if right now they're going through a bit of a bad patch. This was one of the best performances you will see this season in the Bundesliga. They were so dominant. They scored five. They had so many shots. They gave nothing away to Leipzig at all. It was just very, very impressive. I just don't know. I just don't think they can do that consistently, Stuttgart. But, I mean, hopefully this is enough for a top four finish. You know,
Leipzig have had a tough run of opponents. Yeah. Obviously, they played Frankfurt and so on. But they are dropping like a stone. Yeah. He needs to turn around quickly.
Yeah. Atletico Madrid dominate and beat Valencia 2-0. Memphis Depay started with Griezmann up front, and nearly scored a wonder goal. I'm sure you loved it.
Wouldn't you have loved that since you're all about the
touch? He's such a lovely player.
He flicks it over the defender, goes around, and just smashes it from like 30 yards just over the bar.
And he scored as well in that game. So.
Depay's special, and Moise Kean maybe. Hey, Moise, maybe you can learn from Depay. He's only learned the good bits. The magic of the cup, Jules. Hey. They always talk about Little Maidstone United, who I discovered are in the sixth tier of the English football pyramid, go on the road to knock out Ipswich Town, who I discovered are apparently really good in the championship.
Yeah.
I believe they're second in the table, reportedly.
Yeah,
and they could be in the Premier League this season.
And this was just, I mean, incredible because Maidstone had two shots. They scored two goals.
You can say it. Were they lucky?
They were so lucky. But again, there's nothing wrong by being lucky.
It's part of the
romance. Don't give me the whole game plan work. The game plan, it was the game plan to concede 38 shots? No, that was not the game plan. 38 shots against them they had. Come on. So give me the luck. Yeah, and it's a great fairy tale story. I love it. Well done. But don't give me the game plan work. They executed it perfectly. Come on. Please.
Oh, yeah, but it's good.
But it's amazing for
all the neutrals will be back.
Yes. We all love Maidstone United, even if I don't know where it is in this country.
Maidstone and Maidenhead are different places.
I say Maidstone maybe?
No,
I get them confused.
Yeah, Maidenhead
in
is
Kent,
near the airport.
Right? Maidstone is in Maidstone's, Kent? Somewhere. Yeah. Georges Lecoq doing an amazing job. Anyway, still. And on the flip side of the FA Cup gap, there were really, really ugly scenes when West Brom lost at home to Wolves in the derby.
So West Brom and Wolverhampton Wanderers is one of the absolute most intense rivalries in England, and for different reasons, because some were up or others were down. I think they actually hadn't played each other in more than 10 years in front of fans. I think they might have played each other during COVID. Wolves, obviously a Premier League side, a better side. When they scored to make it 2-0, fighting broke out at one end of the crowd where the Wolves away fans were. At the other end, too, close to the players' families, because there was a bunch of... Wolves and West Brom are very close to each other. The Hawthorns to Molineux, I think, is half an hour, maybe, if that.
Yeah.
And this was near where there were a bunch of Wolves fans who had, I guess, bought tickets in that section of the crowd.
In the home end, yeah.
It was really ugly. The fighting spilled over onto the pitch. The players had to come off the pitch, go down the tunnel. Play was halted for 35 minutes. Police made 5 arrests.
More people involved.
I would assume there's going to be more now because, no, seriously, anybody, you have cameras everywhere. Anybody who comes onto the bike, I would assume there's going to be more. I'm just glad nobody got hurt.
One had blood all over his face, man.
Yeah, not a good look. Let's turn to the AFCON, Jules. Angola beat up Namibia 3-0 and advanced to the quarterfinal. Easy peasy?
Not really, no, but it was a good win, I thought, for them.
Should have been. Angola are a lot better than Namibia.
Yeah, they should. And I think they will get a lot of confidence in that game. Namibia, we said, they're there because they were one of the best third, and they should not really be there at this kind of level. But this Angola team, I would not want to face them. You know, Mabululu scored that amazing goal too, so, you know, well done to them. And Angola will play Gabi. Your Super Eagles next. Ademola Lookman scored twice. They beat arch rival Cameroon 2-0.
That's right. I'm psyched. Game. I'm hyped. I'm amped. Victor Osimhen, I thought didn't score, but I thought played really, really well. Yeah. Ademola Lookman, it's funny. I remember his debut with Everton, and he looked like a child. He had a really youthful face. Now, he looks like a 40-year-old man. I mean, in terms of just his face. No, I don't mean it in a negative way. No, but he's got the beard. He's got the look. It's really weird how he's pretty badass, right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Do you remember that time Atalanta when he scored like in 11 games in a row, something crazy last season in Serie A. Amazing.
Yeah, no. He's turned into a really good player. Cameroon, we've only seen them in spurts, even the group stage. But before all the self-harm they did with inside the squad and the goalkeeper and you know, Nana and Neto and Rico Bressong.
It was a shambles. We said it.
It's been a shambles, and it was almost like he didn't show up. I mean,
completely.
It was a real nail-biter between Egypt and Congo, but the Pharaohs are out. And even my boy Gabaski couldn't help them on the penalties.
No, because this was a great penalty shooter. He went to 7-7. Then Gabaski took one, the goalkeeper for
Egypt. 18 penalty takers. I think he was the 19th.
Who should not have been playing because he only played because the number one got injured in the last group stage game for Egypt. Gabaski missed. And then the Congo goalkeeper who played for Rodez in the French second division scored his, and he always looks so confident. I love that. So that's a massive win for Congo. And if you listen to the show a few weeks back, we said this Congo team is really good. They've got good chemistry, a good coach, good players, Kakuta, Wissa, Bakambu, etc. And Bemba. And here we go. I think they're one of the surprise.
Those three guys you mentioned, Kakuta, Wissa, and Bakambu, didn't take penalties because they were all off.
Yeah.
Which also shows you there's some
depth as
mental
depth
there too.
Equatorial Guinea were devastating in the group stage. They played really well, but they're out too, falling to Mohamed Bayo's buzzer beater in the 8th minute of injury time.
This AFCON is so, has just been wild, so
it's been
exciting.
Amazing.
I mean, Equatorial Guinea, I say it was the greatest respect to Guinea and Serhou Guirassy.
Yeah.
They have to kick themselves.
Yeah, massively. They
it was a stupid and unnecessary red card, I thought. And then to go to get a penalty with 10 men and to miss it, putting yourself in this situation.
100%.
I don't know if they played for penalty kicks towards the end or maybe they were tired. I mean, Egypt, going back to that, certainly played for
penalty kicks for sure.
They went down to 10 men. But then to concede that goal in the 8th minute of injury time.
Yeah.
I don't know where Guinea's going, but I'll tell you what. I mean, they play Congo next, if I'm not
That's
mistaken.
That's a big game.
It's a big game. It feels like it's downhill for Congo.
Yeah.
Jules, shall we check in on our pal, John Texter, and his Lyon team? So they lose at home to Rennes, but Rennes left something behind. It's a tall, lanky Serb.
It is. Who won a lot in his career because Nemanja Matic has been transferred to Lyon from Rennes, which should be surprising. Remember I told you the story?
Is it a loan?
No.
Didn't they pay like $5 million from him for Roma 6 months ago?
And they got three back this time now.
So they really don't like him. If like 6 months later, you're willing
they
to take
to get rid. Because we told you the story about the kids and international school in Rennes, all of that. He's going to go to Lyon.
If it's better international schools in
Lyon.
I mean,
if you watch the first half, when Rennes were 3-0 up at halftime at the Groupama Stadium in Lyon, Maybe somebody saw Nemanja Matic trying to leave the stadium. Say, hey, no, you've signed now. You have to stay here. It got a little bit better in the second half because Lyon scored two goals and Rennes was just controlling the game. They lost 3-2. The fans were, again, not happy at all. This is going to be a big fight for not going to not go down. But I don't know how this team is there, really. And I think Texter is to blame. I think the players, of course, have to be blamed. But I'm just not sure how much Matic changes the dynamic.
No, he doesn't.
That's it.
Simple.
Lazio and Napoli served up a scoreless draw. I mean, it was not just scoreless. It was a bad game. One shot on target in the whole game. Gab, this was one of the ugliest games this weekend.
Yeah, so much of the battle for top four contenders. I mean, Maurizio Sarri, the screws have come loose. Napoli, you expect it. The master disaster's in charge. He's like, ooh, let me go to my back three and try to bore everybody out of it. He even had the guts to say, oh, I thought we played really, really well. Maybe we could have exploited their high line a little more. The reason Lazio were playing a high line is because you had everybody in the penalty box.
Yeah.
It was horrendous. We don't need to talk about this anymore.
I thought he was not going to play back three like at Napoli. I thought he said, no, don't worry.
Yeah, he's Mazzarri, the master disaster. Monaco go down to 10 men and then 9 men at the end away to Marseille, but they still manage a 2-2 draw. Jules, Rino Gattuso will be ranting more than usual given Monaco had their first guy sent off after 11 minutes.
Yeah, Maripan, which I thought was really harsh, by the way, to be fair. And Gattuso says the line again. Oh, there's I could not have asked much more from my players. What about asking them to win a game where they play for 85 minutes or something with an extra man? Because it's okay, you can have a lot, you know, you can run a lot and put a lot of effort in, and your manager say, listen, yeah, we tried. And but you drew, you played almost the whole game with 11 men against 10. And yeah, Vitinha could have scored at the end. I don't know what's going on with him. They maybe probably played over the top a year ago for him.
Big Vitinha?
Big Vitinha, yeah. Who's definitely not as good as small Vitinha.
Or Vitinho.
Or Vitinho. Should have won the game for them. But in the end, I'm glad that Hutto, who had a tough time lately, got this one out, and they got a point in the big derby against the big rival away with 10 men for so long. It's really good for Monaco. Gab, ugly scenes in League One as well. Referee Craig Hicks awards a late penalty to Bournemouth against
Portsmouth.
Did I say Bournemouth? Yeah. Portsmouth, sorry, against Portvale, and a fan runs onto the field to play and chases the referee.
If you watch the video of this, you see this fool run onto the pitch and run after him. What I thought was ridiculous and frankly shameful, if I was the manager of either of these two teams, like, you don't want your players to get hurt, and I know, as I've heard others say, oh, but you never know, when a fan runs onto the pitch, he could be carrying a taser or a knife or a machete, whatever. But the referee's running away from him, terrified.
Know, like,
and he runs right past the players. In the end,
nothing.
No, it's one of the assistant coaches who stopped the fan.
Yeah, maybe you're shocked.
No,
I don't know.
Obviously this fan belongs in a zoo or a cage somewhere. I just feel bad for the referee. Obviously, nobody needs to deal with this. It looked like something that you saw from like the third division in Brazil in like the 1970s or something.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
It's terrible.
Algeria, we're hoping to lure Zinedine Zidane to coach your national team. How'd that go, Jules?
So I really like the idea. So Jamel Belmadi got sacked because of how terrible they were again at bottom of their group in AFCON. And imagine you're the federation, you think, okay, who could we go for? We could go for, I'm sure they've got a few candidates, but let's why not sing big? And go for big. What worse could happen is that the guy says no, right? And they go for Zidane, obviously from Algerian backgrounds. And Zidane said no. And we all know why, because he's got his eyes on another team. But I'd like the fact that they tried.
He's got his eyes on France.
Yeah, I think he knows that.
After the Euros.
Very likely that Deschamps stepped down after the Euros and it'll be his. So, yeah, it makes sense. But I just love the fact that they tried. It's lovely. Union Berlin beat Darmstadt 1-0. Merch to producer Freddy's joy, of course. But Gab, this match made history for another reason.
That's right. As you know, Bielsa, the Union Berlin manager, he was suspended after slapping Leroy Sané, not once, but twice last Wednesday. So his assistant steps in, and his assistant happens to be a woman, Marie-Louise Etta.
Yeah.
And she becomes the first woman to coach in a Bundesliga game.
It was great to see.
I think now we've had women coaches in the top flight in two of the big five leagues.
Yeah.
Right? Because I forget the name of... It was in France. Was it 5 years ago?
But that was second division at Clermont at the time. With
Clermont Foot?
Yeah, Clermont Foot, your other favorite club.
Oh, wait, so this is the first time in the Big Five?
Yeah, I think the first time in the Big Five.
Notable. Some players are reportedly keen to leave the Saudi Pro League. Others are keen to go there.
Yeah, wow.
Ivan Rakitic is on his way. And David De Gea could soon be too, which I don't really understand why they need to wait for the transfer window for De Gea, given he's been unemployed for 6 months. But they've been linked with Al-Shabaab.
Yeah, Al-Shabaab, of course.
Which means the boys, I think.
Yeah, which, where they wanted to bring Jose Mourinho to the club, and it might still happen. And maybe Ivan Rakitic said yes because he knows this is happening. And maybe David De Gea, who didn't want to go to Saudi at all for the last 6 months, maybe he's also happy to join now. We saw Matias Süle, who apparently had a big offer and refused to go, or said no, rejected it. I mean, Rakitic could be Süle's dad, probably. So towards the end of your career, maybe. I mean, De Gea has been training on his own for 6 months. I just still don't get the vibe.
Al-Shabaab, by the way, not one of the PIF four. I guess they're kind of in the intermediate in terms of spending alongside with Al-Ittihad.
Yeah.
I'd be a little cautious about going to a non-PIF club, frankly.
Yeah,
that's all I'm going to say.
I agree. The Women's Super League would remain an open competition with promotion and relegation. Gab, some clubs, reportedly led by Tottenham and Daniel Levy, believe that it would be more sustainable if it was a closed league.
Yeah, so part of the argument here is that, I've said this many times, some people don't believe that women's football should necessarily follow the European men's football model. What you have is... the wealthy clubs absolutely dominating the smaller clubs. And so maybe if you didn't have the concerns of relegation, maybe it would be easier to plan. Maybe you could divide up the money better because everybody's losing money in this league. So I don't know. I mean, reportedly Daniel Levy was in favor of it. It could also be Daniel Levy, such a figure of hate among so many people that anything bad, you could say, Daniel Levy supports
it. It's him.
Yeah, pineapple on pizza. Oh, I bet Daniel Levy supports that.
Of course.
More women's football jewels. UEFA president Alexander Čeferin, in an interview with The Guardian, said every women's competition in the world still loses money. Broadcasters need to step up. He also questioned whether it was right to, as they do in some countries, like Italy, for example, it was right to force the men's clubs to have a women's division, and whether that was the right way forward.
Yeah, I mean, forcing clubs to have a women's side is not because if to do a good job, you need to be fully committed, fully involved, and if somebody has forced you to do it, I think it could be kind of productive. For the financial aspect of women's competitions, yeah, of course. But what about maybe you start having a proper look at the women's football calendar in general? And we talked about Women's Champions League, for example, who is played at times where you've got the men's international break, where you think it's a good idea, but then they end up playing the same day that you big countries are playing. We've said that the Champions League calendar fixture list is not put at the right times. And no wonder maybe why some don't want to broadcast it. In those days and time. So maybe you get more money if you were actually paying a bit more attention on where they should play, how you could promote it before moaning that they all the time lose money.
Yeah, and I think you're right about the broadcasters stepping up, but at some point you also need kind of proof of concept, and maybe you can do more on the cost control side as well, and maybe you should.
And Mo Seferin, Gabby, hit back at those accusing him of a power grab by changing the statutes to allow him to run for another term where he should not really be allowed to. And he said he hasn't decided yet if he will or not. So he's backtracking a little bit, right?
Well, he said he hasn't decided yet. Fair enough. But he says that this thing with changing the statutes, he says, and look, he's a lawyer. You know my thoughts on lawyers. I have no idea if what he says is true or not. he had a real go at somebody, and I think you can guess who it is, who's planting all these mean stories about him in the English media. I don't know if it's true or not, but he says that, oh, the way the statutes are written now, actually, there are no term limits and I could run forever. So we need to change them to clarify the situation.
Right.
And it's a whole thing about whether his first term is actually a term because he took over
halfway through,
yeah. Right? I just clarify it, do it, and then think long and hard about whether you should stick around.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, it's not a good look. You have unfinished business there. He also said that, remember we told you about how Zvonimir Boban left and attacked him, and he said, well, it's not worth commenting on what Boban says. Well, you know what? Maybe it is, because Boban is an influential person.
Yeah,
I think you have to be a really... You want to appear the strong man, that's fine, and you still have all the support, but especially if you're going to effectively be a counterweight to FIFA, which UEFA generally is, I think people have to have faith in you. And one way to do it is also saying, all right, what is actually best? Is it really to have a situation where somebody can stick around for this much? I don't know. I think he needs to really, really have a think about where he is. Romário had his, like, see how he did that? Had his birthday party, Jules, and guess who was among the guests?
Yeah, he turned 58, and he invited Neymar Jr. Of course, why not? I mean, I've got nothing. Yeah, Neymar is recovering from his injury back home in Brazil.
Nothing wrong with that.
He's been working really hard, I'm sure, on his rehab, you know, eating well, sleeping well, working hard, working well. And then he turns up at Romário's birthday party. How can we say? With a few kilos too many, maybe.
What, they do weigh him? How do you know? Maybe he bulked up. Maybe he worked on his upper body.
Remember when we said that story about how he like organized a New Year's Eve party on that massive cruise boat, whatever you say in English, for 4,000 people when they're partying for 3 days? I'm really worried. I won't lie. I'm really, really, really worried.
He doesn't play for PSG anymore. Don't worry.
The New York Times reports that a number of individuals convicted in U.S. courts as part of the FIFA scandal a few years ago, if you remember, that brought down former president Sepp Blatter, could appeal and have their cases overturned.
So this is complicated. I'm going to try to make this very simple. So the reason FIFA came down in 2016, I think everybody knows, is because the U.S. Department of Justice took an interest in this and some of the money that was changing hands, money laundering, and so on. The reality is most jurisdictions cannot investigate FIFA because they're not powerful enough, right? But the feds, they're actually really, really powerful, and the U.S. has nukes and all this other stuff, right? So they went and they convicted a bunch of people. Now, one of them, who's actually a TV executive at Fox, a guy named Hernan Lopez, he was accused of paying bribes to help Fox beat ESPN to the rights to the World Cups in 2018 and 2022. He was convicted of wire fraud and money laundering, but he's now free because the judge ruled that the wire fraud statute does not apply. He decided a Supreme Court decision in May where, because as I understand, I'm not a lawyer here, don't quote me, but because it's overseas, read the New York Times story for more detail. But basically, this kind of invalidates this sort of prosecution. And now Jose Angel Naputo was the head of the Paraguayan Football Association and a member of the FIFA Exco, who was banned. He spent, I think, 4 years in prison, where he became a chef in prison, incidentally. Now he's saying, hey, I might appeal my conviction too. I might have a strong case on these same grounds.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Lawyers, if you're into this legal stuff, read it. You know my thoughts on this. If these people are innocent and commit crimes, they should go free. Simple as. But not a great look.
No.
Not a great look at all. Jules, this brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Thursday.
Oh, my God. Of course.
Midweek league football. I don't like midweek league football. I think we should be on the weekends.
But still.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.